Hey guys, I don't know if you're like me, but I love Count the Dings and everything it has to offer. I just can't find everything I need. You know, I know about Cinephobe, and I know about the mailbag, and I know about Bomb, but that's all we do, right, Amin?
No, we do so much more.
What?
Yeah, absolutely. If you sign up, patreon.com/countthedings, you'll find a plethora of other content, fresh content, extended content, the OG pod overflow, the Cinephobe cold opens that we've taken and made their own thing to live only there, the Rewatchingtons, Bomb in its full and unadulterated cut, early drops of Cinephobe episodes, and so much more.
Said the OG pod. Now, is it new or is it old?
Mace, I'm glad you asked that. It is a new incarnation of the old OG pod.
Oh.
So it's me, Zach, Trey, Waz, Tom.
I love those guys.
Just like we always were, going back to the True Hoop days, we're recreating that magic, recapturing it, and putting it back out. We're talking hoops, we're talking pop culture, and most importantly, we're talking for 40 minutes for free, but then another specific Patreon exclusive segment for every one of those episodes.
Funny enough about that OG pod, you're getting Tom and Trey on Mondays. You're getting me and Waz, aka Zosny, on Wednesdays. Amin's floating in between.
I'm a floater.
You never know when you're going to get Amin in those, so you got to listen to them all.
And what if I'm not sure what Maze looks like? Because I've always thought he's a fat man with a fedora. He's got a weird voice. How can I see for myself what this Maze character actually looks like?
It's crazy you don't know the answer to this because it's the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page.
What?
The CT5s on the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page. You can look at all of us.
You can get all the OG pods on YouTube too, at Count the Dings 1 on YouTube, at Cinephobe Pod on YouTube. Patreon.com/Count the Dings gets you everything all in one feed. You can link it to your Spotify. And now enjoy the show.
Hey, listener, Zach Harper here. Underdog Fantasy, the easiest place to play fantasy sports. Also, fastest growing fantasy app in the industry. Here's how it works. The Pick'em game. Pick whether your favorite players will have a higher or lower stat total in this week's game for a chance to win big. How big, you ask? I'm so glad you asked that question, listener. You can win up to 100 times your money in a single night. Pick between 2 and 5 players, build a pick'em entry. You can also do rivals picks. You can put like Tyrese Haliburton and Jalen Brunson against each other, and whoever has more points, more assists, more rebounds, whatever you want to do, that is your rivals pick. I would maybe go with Jalen Brunson in these playoffs. By the way, in the regular season, Jalen Brunson, scoring tear, going higher on his point totals all the time. Joel Embiid, whenever he did actually play, higher on his scoring totals all the time. Victor Wembanyama, for the next 15, 20 years, here's a pro tip for you, take higher on the blocks. That's right. So you're probably wondering, how do you sign up? Oh my God, listener, you are full of good questions today. Sign up with the promo code DING, that's D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. $250, man, that's a lot. Visit underdogfantasy.com or find them in the App Store. And don't forget to register with our code DING, D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick and first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. Must be 18 or older, 21 or older in Massachusetts, Arizona, 19 or older in Alabama and Nebraska, and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. Arizona 1-800-NEXT-STEP. That's 1-800-639-8783. Or text NEXT STEP to 53342. New York, call the 24/7 HOPE line at 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369.
Another day is here and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's showtime! I don't know if I have enough mezcal for this.
Let's get started. I should have fixed the drink. See, you know what? I didn't partake in the drinking. I had a little puff before we joined here today.
Yeah, I had a little hit as well. Get me on my level.
Good for y'all.
Yeah. Nice for you guys. Real nice.
Happy for both of you. That's really nice.
Why? You did not partake?
Evening blaze sesh? Yeah. It's 2022.
Amazing. You didn't grab nothing before you started?
No. You know what? I was going to bring this up at some point, but let's talk about it now. So I listened to the Kendrick album on mushrooms, and it was amazing.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Okay.
We had a little bit of an evening on Saturday, and I wasn't quite ready to wind down yet. Mm-hmm. So I just threw on the AirPods and climbed in bed and listened to it with my eyes closed, and it was obviously how all music should be listened to.
Right.
I couldn't tell if it was just that I had never, that I hadn't done that really ever before, but it created a lot more depth. I think, Jason, you and I were talking a little bit about how, like, the beats weren't premium, and after that listen, I would have to disagree. I really enjoyed a lot of the instrumentation and the production. It was really amazingly put together, and I just had a great time.
Wow. Right. Well, I don't want to be immediately associated with hating on the beats, being that one of my very good friends, Dahi, produced a lot of that album.
Did I just blow up your spot? private conversations here?
Yeah. Like, you brought something out of the group chat into the public forum. Like, that's like the biggest sin in the world.
God forbid I create content by sharing our discussions. That's my fault.
Everybody knows what's in the chat stays in the chat. It's a binding.
Wow, that's it.
It has to.
Yeah, that's the group chat communal rules. Like, we can say whatever we want within the confines of the group chat, but we're not spreading that for the public to hear our very immediate and maybe rushed opinions.
I get it, because I got some group chats.
Look. Sometimes you have to ask for permission. Be like, "Hey, is it cool if I share
this with somebody?"
That's it. I didn't ask for consent, and that's my fault, Jason. So I want to apologize to you.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. I mean, this show should be about white people apologizing to black people. You know, being that we're talking about Atlanta.
Haven't we done that enough all season long?
No. We got to turn it up another notch.
The White America Apology Tour 2022.
Now I feel like I'm on trial. That's a shout out to later in this show, and we talk about the trial of Tyreek, or
Young Aaron,
known in this show, Aaron.
Young Aaron. Oh my God. So wait. Yeah. All right. What is he? Is he that black guy's son?
When you say that black guy,
I mean the black guy who's playing his dad in the show. Like, I think that was the most, I mean, you know, they always throw like a extremely confusing bit at you, and you're like, am I supposed to be forgetting this, or am I supposed to be curious about it the whole time?
In the show, he's definitely supposed to be his son. I'm gonna say that for sure. The actor's name is Tyreek Withers.
Right.
Tyreek, T-Y-R-I-Q. I venture to say that is not a white person's name.
No, he looks black. Like, he looks black, but they have him, you know, obviously acting in the white mannerisms. But I was just like, I wonder who his parents really are, you know? And if he was, because, okay, here's my issue with it. He doesn't really seem white passing enough. Like, when I saw him, I was like, oh, he looks like a nigga. Like, white people wouldn't think he was white. You know? Like, when they commented on his nose, I was like, yeah. Like, he definitely looks like a nigga with, like, a white person haircut. Like,
yeah.
Like, not a white. Like, the white girl that he was dating was white. Like, he looked.
He was white. I can confirm.
Yeah. He looks kind of black. And I was like, he looks kind of black this whole time. When he's sitting next to the other white, like, surfer looking dude with the hoodie, I'm like, no, those are white people. This is a non-white person trying to integrate with them.
Right.
What was y'all feeling towards that?
as soon as he came on the screen, I immediately thought that he was biracial.
Right.
And so once he like threw out the N words and had the hard ER on it, I was like, what's happening right here? Because clearly
that left his mouth clumsily.
Yeah. Like it hurt to hear that. I was like, wait, that just shook me. But I could clearly tell that he had some black in him. I'm like, come on.
Right. And so it was like he was clearly acting like a white person, but I felt like
because he can be white passing.
I don't know. I don't think there's a such thing as white passing. Like white people will accept people who are not their race, but they know that and they treat them differently. I've seen it happen.
I think what you're forgetting here, Jason, in this particular case, is that white people are dumb as fuck. And that our guy, Aaron, is not hanging out with the best and brightest. They are all jacked up about going to Arizona State.
Yeah. Like, wow.
Or not even Arizona State.
It wasn't Arizona Southern State.
It was Arizona ASC, State College. Yeah.
State College, yes.
Yeah.
So we're not dealing with the best and brightest. I think that he did a good enough job. I think my favorite part was the final scene, because that really showed that he had it in his – he had the capabilities all along, you know, to do both. It was pretty amazing. So,
Well, I thought the concept was –
Did I think he was white? No. Yeah. Did I accept that he was white for the story? Yes.
Well, I thought the concept was that he went to jail and got all of this attitude, you know what I'm saying, and basically was hanging around everybody in jail and then switched his whole swag up. Like, not really that he had it inside him, but just like...
No, I mean the actor. That's what I...
Yeah, for sure. Okay. For sure. Yeah, no, he definitely had that inside him.
Yo, before we continue, I want to introduce the other voice that our listeners may be hearing. My best friend, Gabrielle Phillip, is here. Okay, woo! I just want to... So I'm gonna do my friend justice, because I tell her all the time, I think she is fantastic. She's a phenomenal person. She's like my superhero for real in real life. So I'm gonna read an official bio here, okay? Gabrielle Phillip is an active duty Army non-commissioned officer stationed at Fort Bragg, North Carolina. shout out. She serves as a psychological operations NCO and has been in special operations her entire 13-year career. Born in Atlanta and raised in Greensboro, she spent part of her childhood and most summers on the twin islands of Trinidad and Tobago. Trini to the bone.
To the bone, yes.
She attended North Carolina Central University and, like Kanye, built up the nerve to drop her ass up out of college before enlisting into the Army. In her free time, she enjoys cooking and digesting politics and being a bad bitch.
Hey.
Welcome.
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 To Showtime. We didn't
Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
Ooh, yeah. We're still Showtime.
Yeah, we're still Showtime, y'all, even after winning time.
That's right.
Showtime. I love it.
Yeah.
Like no Swiss beats.
Oh, yeah, we need the Swiss beats drop. Showtime.
Yeah. Showtime.
Showtime. Time for shows.
That's right.
I'm telling you, this last episode was a doozy. I think I was watching it, and, like, I kind of disagree. I think that he is. The actor was white passing, only because, and I talked to Bethany about this. I have a good friend of mine who is black and is married to a white woman. And when I tell you they spit out two white kids with big noses, I mean, and I remember when I met his kids for the first time, I was like, whose children are those?
Right.
But to me, he was, because I've been around that, and I've seen that he was white passing, but I agree with you, Jason. It's like he get around too many Negroes. Think of it like, boy, your daddy black, ain't he?
Right.
He has that. But I was watching it, and I just remember when they showed the pan of the stuff in his room, I was like, this is a hard R starter pack. It's a hard R starter pack. Like, he's got the Post Malone jersey from the tour. He was a gamer. Then I saw, oh no, it was Logan Paul. Logan Paul. Yep. And I was like, oh, this is a starter. Like, this is a hard R starter pack. And then he dropped it, and I literally wrote down, I was like, was that a hard R? Like, it was. Mm-hmm. It was a hard R.
It was.
But what I got from him, I was like, he's passing, but he's heavy on that, please pass, All Lives Matter. This got to be somebody whose favorite rapper is Macklemore, like, because there's no way.
That's probably generous. That's probably right. Generous.
Logic.
Wow.
No.
Yo, I did have somebody say, was that Logic?
Yeah.
Pretty funny.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like we haven't talked about the elephant in the room yet of the episode, which is crazy.
Oh, I mean,
yeah. Yeah. But yeah, Kevin Samuels co-starred in this episode. RIP.
Man, the timing.
Why? The timing, the performance. Was he giving or what? I mean,
I thought he did a great job.
No, he showed out. I mean, like, he really did his thing.
Yeah, I thought, like, he did great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he would have been a good actor.
Right, and that's really kind of how I feel. I felt like robbed of his acting career. Like, damn, he could have flourished in this. I'm sure Tyler Perry would have cast him as something. You know,
you're right.
He definitely would have had a nice little arc. You know what I'm saying?
You're right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, he did great in this role.
So I'm going to need your help here because I saw that he was starring in this episode as Robert S. Lee, not Robert E. Lee. And I looked him up and I saw that he had passed away. And that is literally all I know about Kevin Samuels. So if I were to ask one of you to give me a scouting report on what Kevin Samuels is about, who wants to go?
All right. I mean,
this is the Cliff Notes version. Gabby.
All right.
Birdman hand rub.
Yep, yeah.
Right, do my best.
Yeah.
All right. So, best way I could describe him, if you were a man of a particular demographic, let's go ahead and call it black men, who felt like you needed an ego boost to explain why you couldn't get dates or why these girls ain't shit, Kevin Samuels was for you. And that's basically how I look at it. Now, I do know that there are some times that he allegedly went in on black men too, but the majority of his content that goes viral was some of his critiques, if you will, his colorful critiques of black women. I think the last one that went viral was telling women, if you're over 35 and what is it, you got 35 and you got a kid, you're
considered leftovers.
You're not,
See, this
leftovers.
Is where it came from, man.
Oh,
leftover
wow.
men, yeah, leftover women.
Women,
it was,
yeah.
He was the one behind that. Yeah.
He was.
Really going full circle on this. So if I understand correctly, he's the leader of the black incels?
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
Yes.
He has risen to guide them into the next frontier, or he had.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe he'll rise again. You never know.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Well, that's interesting. Thanks for that update, Gabby. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Right. And it's interesting to note how, I mean, I hate to be that guy, but how he met his demise.
Oh my God.
I mean, it's an important part of the story and of the arc, honestly. But he was basically divorced twice. He was with a woman in a hotel room, I believe, that was probably in her 30s or something like that, a much younger woman. And it was just him and her. Obviously, you know, people think there's drugs or something involved. We don't know. I won't speculate on that. But he died in those circumstances of being with a woman who he barely just met, you know, in some random hotel. And, you know, of a heart attack. And so it was obviously like a sad story seeing what, you know, he was capable of. He was pretty well spoken and seemed to have some sense about him. Maybe he was, you know, obviously in the wrong direction. That's another issue I kind of have with the whole Kendrick album, also the Kodak Black aspects of that. So yeah, there's certain people who, you know, have skills and ability, but they use them for the wrong things, and yeah, people don't fuck with that.
So his YouTube channel, I guess he kind of tried to promote himself as like an image consultant, and he would give people advice, and his show kind of started off as like giving men advice on like how to up their game and step their game up. He would give like cologne recommendations, how yeah. to wear your clothes and your watch and how things should fit on you as having a nice suit. I don't know where it came in to be where he decided to like talk about women and like women dating. It was just it was like a left turn.
I think women were asking for in. Exactly.
Yeah, they would call in, but it got to a point where he's like asking them how much they weigh, their dress size, if they're single, how many kids they have, and he would just kind of like base all of this off of like why you're single, why you're not going to get a man, and a lot of times it was always why you don't deserve to have a man. Like no one's paying no attention to you. You're not in shape. You got this many kids. You know, like he would just go in on these women.
He had like this rubric of how he rated women, and it was like niggas love that. Like how whatever his grading system was, niggas was signed up.
And so this is why Jason decided to call Van a strong seven.
Yeah,
he's doing the Kevin Samuels rating.
I was mocking
the scale.
I was mocking his whole ism and like this psychology of like we're rating these women on these very specific kind of, you know, shallow things, you know, that have really nothing to do with like the soul of a person or anything like meaningful, you know, but it's like a lot of people live in that chakra, whichever one that is, like, you know.
The funny part, he would ask the women to rate themselves sometimes, and they're like, oh, I think I'm like an 8. And he'd be like, hey, girl, let's bring that down about 4.
And he was funny. He was a pretty funny dude. Like like his mannerisms and how he reacted to people was really like, it was funny as hell.
So I wonder what it was that Donald Glover or whoever did casting, what made them say, we need him on our show?
Right.
I want to give him a role. I want to give him
when he leaned into that mic and said, who's black? I busted like, that was perfect line delivery.
I remember when he came out, I was like, why this cap and gown? Why?
Yeah. He had a cap and gown. Hilarious.
Yeah, I was like, why this cap and gown?
Nobody else had on the cap and gown.
Nothing. Then I heard George Wallace and I was like, I'm dead. I am dead.
George Wallace had a great cameo in this episode. Oh my God.
What a legend.
Have you guys seen Bebe's Kids?
Yes. Come on. That's one of my favorite movies ever. Yeah. Yes.
So you know like when they're in the court, it's like the fake Abraham Lincoln is like judging them in that courtroom. That's how I felt they were when they were on that pedestal in the gym. That shit was hilarious.
So Aaron was one of the Bebe's kids.
Yeah, exactly.
He was Leon.
Yeah, exactly. The square nigga. Oh, man.
Square.
Yeah, that scene was definitely far and away the best part of the episode to me. The way it was shot, the way it was edited together, the dynamic lighting, and just all the non sequiturs, just shouting out all the answers without any context.
Yeah.
NBA young boy.
227.
Yeah. It was fucking amazing.
He said, if she's got her foot in it, that means it's good, right?
But yes, poor Aaron's world is turned upside down when Kevin Samuels shows up and offers scholarships to all of the black students, but it's not just going to be based on your parents or anything like that. It's going to be based on a very specific test. He's going to be grading you, Jason, on a very specific set of qualifications.
Yeah.
And we have now entered an episode of Atlanta that has taken the focus a little bit off of what it means to be a white ally and focused it more on what it means to be black in general. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm.
As an identity, as opposed to just the color of your skin.
Yeah, I think that for me, as a child of immigrants, this episode hit a lot, because for me, it was basically a televised discussion about foundational blacks and African descendants of slaves and who's blacker. And what I got from it, right, is this: you have this kid, Aaron, right, and he's getting asked all these questions and he's throwing out these ridiculous answers, just going off face. And I thought about, man, like, even in the black community, even if I got all those questions wrong, like, would the greater society care? Right? Mm. Like, right. I'm still black to them. Right? Right? So yeah. Even if I got all those answers wrong by Mr. Robert Shay Lee, if I step out, yeah, Shay Lee.
I kind of wish it was Robert Sway Lee.
That would have been perfect.
Perfect.
Yeah. And that's, I walked away from that, like, that discussion about ADOS or foundational blacks. So it's like, that whole discussion sucks.
It really does suck. Yeah, even when people talk about reparations, it's like,
right.
Who deserves it and who doesn't? Yeah, that's something that's always kind of frustrated me. But there was a very understated way that they tackled it this episode. It wasn't just so loud, you know? And to have, at the end of the episode, sorry to jump so far ahead, but for him to be with a Nigerian-born man or a teenager, and he didn't get the scholarship either.
He had a better flamethrower, though.
His flamethrower was better.
It was hard. That was a hard flamethrower.
It was a Nigerian flamethrower. Yeah.
Niger don't carry last, apparently. But, like, it was so much. Like, there was that. Then there was, like you said, there was also colorism baked into that. Mm. Nuanced colorism. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, we're just melting all the isms in this episode. Racism, colorism. Right. Yeah. I was like, okay.
And it was all shot in black and white.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Which I thought was a very interesting choice to choose to do the black, Are You Black Enough episode.
I thought that kind of, I think there's a couple reasons, but I think one of the reasons was, I think it made Aaron look whiter.
Yeah.
Yes. No, it did. Yep. It did.
Yes.
If you, and the way he was lit and stuff like that, like, especially in the gym, you know, he's hit with that bright spotlight and he looks very light skinned. Mm-hmm. But what you said, Gabby, you know, about society not giving a crap what Kevin Samuels judges or not, I thought that was kind of the point, was like, Aaron had always had an easier life because he was able to pass as white, and he had gotten comfortable there, and he had white friends, and he did white things, and like, his dad was just blown away by the way he talked. Like, it's about the traffic stop, right? And the cop pulled somebody over. And Aaron's like, well, he probably did something wrong then, and that's why the cops pulled him over, because cops are good. just couldn't believe it. It was just stunned into silence. But I thought it was brilliant to have Kevin Samuels come along and flip the paradigm on him all of a sudden, and suddenly it's not the desirable thing anymore, and he's completely fish out of water.
Yeah, there's a commentator that I listen to named Reese Colbert, and sometimes she's on Sirius XM, but she always says everybody has their nigga wake up call. It doesn't matter who you are, whether it you're Aaron. She talks about, like, Tim Scott, Clarence Thomas, who got a phenomenal shout out during.
Oh yeah,
it's like OJ Simpson got his. Like, you're gonna be in these spaces and you're gonna feel comfortable. And then you're going to get your wake-up call, which is like, oops, guess what?
Right. It's really like that.
It is. It's like that. And I was like, this is such an interesting episode, just the ways that they just keep trying to dissect these very complex issues, but do it in a way that's still funny. And sometimes it's a little on the nose, considering, you know, shooting the episode in black and white, but I think it works. It was a good episode.
So I have a question. I've seen people say that they enjoy that this season is kind of going through the diaspora. They're representing people from all over, with Darius, you know, finding out that he's of Nigerian descent. Like, a lot of people didn't know that until the episode when they're in London. How do you feel? Because I want to go back to Trini on the Bone. I was so excited for you to see this episode. I wanted to hear your thoughts and if they really did Trinidadians justice.
Oh, man. So I'll try to be as succinct as possible.
No, take your time.
That episode, it made me emotional, just because that story hits very close to home, so much so that I rewatched it with my mother. So my mom was born in the late 40s in Trinidad, and when my mom was 16, my grandmother, her mother, left Trinidad and came to the United States and worked for a white family in Chicago, doing the exact same thing as Miss Sylvia. And, you know, to think about the fact that my mom, who's the eldest of six, right, was left in another country to raise her five brothers and sisters while her mother was in the United States taking care of this family. But I thought it was wonderful because, and you talked about this on Showtime before in a previous episode, but if you talked about the fact that I never get to see Trinidadians on TV like that, besides Otto Boland running in the Olympics, and you're not going to see it. And that's understandable. 1.3 million people on the Twin Islands. So you don't really get to see that. And it was nice to see that representation outside of it just only being Jamaica. No shade to Jamaicans, but I thought that was wonderful. I appreciated the accents. Really appreciated the accents, because aside from Chet Hanks. But I think I wrote down that I was like, he sounds like a drunk Irishman who's vacationing in Barbados. I didn't know what that was.
Right.
But it was funny. But yeah, I really appreciated the accents. Really appreciate the dad choking on that mild curry mango. Love the fact that the son was sopping that up. So yeah, it was amazing. I was like, that was my favorite episode of the season, but I think last week's, I don't know, those two might be my two favorite episodes of this season.
Okay.
Which is kind of weird considering they're, you know, the anthology episodes, but right, they just hit so well. But yeah, I thought it was great. I peeped the fact that, like, one thing I noticed about the mom and the dad, like, you're starting off the episode, you mentioned it, you talked about, like, he was running with whatever song he was playing, but he was in a Nike Tech suit, right? I'm like, yeah. So you're just jogging in a Nike Tech suit. And then I noticed his wife, right, before she went to her meeting, she had, like, a Chanel or whatever, but then she shows up to the funeral with a Telfer, like,
yep.
What is going on?
For the culture. She's for the culture.
Right. And then you talk
to Telfer.
Yeah, right. And so we get to the funeral. I thought the funeral scene was amazing. And what I took away from that, I was like, look at this. In this, like, incredible grief that they're going through, Sylvia's paramour, right? Sylvia's paramour, like, when they get all scared or whatever, stops the funeral to explain, no, this is how we grieve. It's almost like, even in all of that sadness and all that pain, you still have to stop and make white people comfortable.
Yeah.
Right.
You still got to stop and make white people comfortable.
It's like, no, you're scaring the white people.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Which is what my grandmother used to tell me, right? Like, my grandmother and my mom, it's like, and I recorded my mom after we watched the episode about that, because my mom and I talked about this, but my mom would say, you know, don't go in front of these white people and embarrass me. Right? Like, that was a thing. Like, you don't do that. And so I thought that was interesting. That
even in their own private space where they're grieving it's still like, now they're in our space, but we still need to make sure that they're comfortable.
You still have to accommodate that. And that's a very real thing that I know, like, a lot of immigrant families and Black families deal with, like, don't want to do that. And nobody will ever get another job as a nanny again, if y'all don't. So it's like, and you still have to explain your humanity. But thought that was awesome. And my mom loved the episode. It was cool to watch it with her and then get some, like, family history off of that. Thought it was legit.
Definitely don't go acting up in front of these white people is like a very common thing. I don't know if white people know about that in the in a Black house, but that is something that's very common in the Black people
household.
Well,
it depends on how good you are at adhering to that rule. Otherwise, how would we know?
Right, exactly.
Oh my God.
I would say, honestly, might be my favorite episode, and I think part of it is because it has one of my favorite songs. So I was gonna ask y'all, just name me one of your I will call it like a don't skip song. Like, if this song comes on your playlist or anything, like, you're like, nah, I'm not ever skipping that. Like,
hello, listener, guess who's back? It's me, Anthony Mays, your favorite butcher turned podcast producer, and I'm here to talk to you about ButcherBox. ButcherBox is the most convenient way to get high quality meat and seafood that you can trust delivered straight to your doorstep, free shipping, vacuum sealed packaging. It's ready to go right then. It's ready to pop in the freezer. You get exclusive member deals and a variety of high quality cuts at an amazing value. Going to the grocery store can be a huge pain. You're usually in a rush at an inconvenient time. You're waiting in line at the meat counter. You're taking a number. Maybe this place doesn't have a number. You're jostling with fellow customers. You're trying to get that ribeye that you want or that nice piece of salmon. Maybe the butcher that you're dealing with has a bad attitude or something. I don't know. That was never me, I promise. But maybe it happens. ButcherBox takes all of that out of the picture. You are always prepared with meat and seafood in the freezer, and you're not going to find quality for this price anywhere else other than ButcherBox. So sign up at butcherbox.com/dings, D-I-N-G-S, and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional $20 off. You can choose salmon, chicken breasts, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/dings and use code DINGS, D-I-N-G-S, to choose your free for a year offer plus get $20 off your first order. Hello, listener. I'm sure you don't need me to tell you that we at Cinephobe love our pets. Zach and Boogie are inseparable. I've got two cats and a dog, and Amin is giving his best ass on performance to convince dog owners that he loves their pet.
Hey, Noodle. Hey, boy. How you doing? And Noodle's just like,
Which is why today's episode is sponsored by the ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program. For many pet parents, summer is all about making travel plans like adventuring through the national parks, visiting pet-friendly beaches, or road tripping across the country. Wherever your journeys take you and your furry friend, you can help protect them along the way with a plan from ASPCA Pet Health Insurance. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program offers customizable accident and illness plans, making it easier for pet parents like you to help your pet get the care they may need. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program has been around for over 18 years, and they've helped more than 600,000 pets during that time. They allow you to customize your plan, helping ensure that your pet's plan is as unique as they are, because vet bills can really add up, especially when you're least expecting it. It's simple. Use their app to submit a claim, and you'll receive reimbursement for eligible vet bills directly into your bank account. To explore coverage, visit aspcapetinsurance.com/dings, D-I-N-G-S. That's aspcapetinsurance.com/dings. Again, that's aspcapetinsurance.com/dings. This is a paid advertisement. Insurance is underwritten by either Independence American Insurance Company or United States Fire Insurance Company and produced by PTZ Insurance Agency Limited. The ASPCA is not an insurer and is not engaged in the business of insurance.
Ascension, Don't Ever Wonder, Maxwell.
Yeah.
Don't ever wonder.
Maze?
I mean, there's a lot. If you want to be somewhat relevant to what we've been talking about, like Money Trees by Kendrick.
Oh, yeah.
Never gonna skip that song.
Yep.
Oh, All Right is another one. Kendrick Lamar. Never skipping All Right, ever.
Right, right. Gabrielle?
I'm thinking, but I think I know what it is. Hold on. I think my don't skip song is Don't Disturb This Groove by The System. I think that is my no skip.
Yeah,
that is my no skip.
Doesn't matter when it comes on. You're like, I gotta let it run.
I have to let that song rock.
You can be in a gym like lifting weights, and it come on. It's like, I'm not turning it.
I'm not turning it. And then
not disturbing this groove.
Not even a little bit. I think when I was in college, there was like a DC Go-Go remix or a DC Go-Go song that had the sample of Don't Disturb This Group. It was that Sexy Ladies, that song. Those two are no skips. No skips.
Wale would be really proud.
For real. Shout out to the DMV.
Shout out to the DMV.
Mine would be the Kid Frankie by Wiz Khalifa, which samples the Loose End song, Hanging on a String.
I do love that song.
And so, the song played twice in the episode. It ends the episode in the perfect, obviously it's reminiscent of Thriller. When he stares at the camera and, we get that freeze frame. And the song was just the perfect soundtrack. And, also they're British black people, so that plays into the whole... diaspora, ADOS conversation that the episode is referencing. So I thought that was a good wink and a nod. But my real favorite moments, and I wrote down some of the questions, was the George Wallace and Kevin Samuels. That was just so perfect. He said, Holy Spirit
we're gonna have Maze answer these.
Yeah, Maze, Holy Spirit or Holy Ghost.
Holy Spirit.
Chop.
Nah, you're wrong. You're wrong, buddy. Chop. You're so wrong. Chop.
Wait. Am I trying to prove that I'm black? Because obviously I'm not. Maybe I'm just being true to myself. Don't tell me that I'm wrong.
He said, orange or grape Kool-Aid?
Orange.
Like Donald Glover's character in this show.
Yeah. And then he said, what soda is good for you?
Yeah. That was
no soda is good for you.
No, it's wrong. Ginger ale. That is incorrect.
Yo.
So I had to write those down because I was like, I actually know the answer to this. This is funny.
Oh my gosh. There was one that I didn't know the answer to.
Which one?
I can't remember. If you say it, if you wrote it down.
The only other one I wrote down was Bobby and Whitney or Will and Jada.
Did
that question age really poorly, or did Kevin Samuels appearing in this episode age more poorly?
Oh no!
Oh my god, that's a good question.
Ooh, no, I mean I was gonna say that question always has the same answer though.
No, I know, but it's just funny. It's even funnier now than it was when they wrote it a month ago a year ago, whatever.
Exactly. 2 years ago, knowing Donald Glover. And so I was going to ask, so we obviously talked a little bit about Kendrick's album earlier, but Kendrick and Donald Glover are around the same age. And I made the comparison in the chat, if we're going to be speaking outside the chat.
Oh, wow. Now that I've given you permission.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, I can out myself if I want to bring up my own opinions. Kendrick Lamar is basically seen and known in the public sphere as a real nigga, or, somebody who definitely is very much black identifying, soul brother number one, James Brown type of black. Like, he's got all of that, in his bag. Donald Glover is walking very far to get where he is right now. His brother, who I don't know much about, is... his partner in creating, his shows and all this stuff. Stephen Glover. And it made me curious to know, what was both of their experiences growing up. Like, this episode piqued that thought mainly in my mind. Like, because I'm thinking, what soul did this come out of? Like, this story come out of, you know, somebody who was dealing with these issues or, you know, thinks a lot about this stuff. Because conversely, I feel like people like Kendrick or, you know, rappers don't really deal with race dynamics in the same way. Like, you know, Kendrick does have his song Complexion on To Pimp a Butterfly. Mm-hmm. So it's not like he's totally ignorant of that or doesn't bring it up in his music. But I think it's in such a different tone and just a different thought process that, you know, people often reference like Donald Glover trying to reckon with his own blackness. But, you know, my question is like, how far does that go back? What is his story about somebody making fun of him because he was hanging out with the white kids? Because that's how he came in the entertainment industry, you know? So
right.
What is the real backstory on all this? And so, yeah, I said, like, Kendrick Lamar is a real nigga. And basically, Donald Glover knows what being a real nigga is and can understand it. And so, like, that's kind of the difference I see of them and at least their entertainment side. But I'm curious to know, like, what you guys think about that.
Ooh.
I was going to give you guys space to chime in, but since y'all are so deep in thought. So I also sent a tweet to the chat, which was, can whoever called Donald Glover an Oreo in high school just apologize so everyone can move on?
Yeah. I was scary to say that. And after you said that, Jason, I'm thinking maybe this last episode is almost like, it's like a mirror episode. It's like Donald Glover trying to answer questions about his own critiques about his blackness, his choice of a partner. Mm-hmm. And then he just rapped about his mulatto babies. I forget whatever song it was he was on. Talked about having his mulatto babies. I just thought that was very interesting. Yeah. And yeah, can we all just move on? I mean, I think he has some complex issues with his own blackness that he's trying to answer through his art.
Now, we had an episode a couple seasons ago where he had like the FUBU, like the character had the FUBU jersey on. His friends picked on him for wearing whatever. I can't remember the actual details of that episode, but some people saw that like maybe this was kind of like an autobiographical type of situation, a story that he was trying to tell. I don't know.
His origin story.
Yeah, right. A little origin story. Yeah, what is his origin story? Why is this the Donald Glover that we get right now? Yeah.
He got told he talked like a white boy in high school.
Right.
And they brought it up in the episode. Yeah. They brought it up in that episode where the kid was like, you know, playing guitar and singing. And he was like, did people pick on you for talking white? And it was like, where did that come from? And I don't think they really touched on that. Just went on to the next subject.
I wonder if the people who picked on him for talking white we're black girls in his high school. That's why he hates us so much.
We're putting it all together, folks.
Hey, I mean, because also real quick, Maze, he also put a twerking video in there and the twerking video was whack. Like, that wasn't a good twerk. That was a video of somebody who doesn't know what a good twerk looks like. And I was like, see, he still can't get black women right. He's doing it on purpose.
Right. All the black women on the show are mid. So there you have it. I think I've unlocked it. A bunch of black girls made fun of him in high school, and this is what we get. Damn.
Yep.
Yeah, I can't speak to his high school, but he went to NYU. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that he was in the minority there. Then while he was at NYU, he was in a comedy group called Derek Comedy. If you type that into your Google machine, you will see Donald Glover standing there with two very white dudes. Extremely white comedy group. Then he got hired at age 23 to write for 30 Rock. Now I know what you're thinking. Oh, Donald Glover writing for 30 Rock. He probably wrote jokes for Tracy Morgan, for the Tracy Jordan character, right? Nope. Donald's main contribution to 30 Rock was writing white jokes for Kenneth the Page, who was from Georgia.
Wow. So the gay white dude in the
The effect. I don't think he was gay. He was very awkward and effeminate. White dude. Yes. He wasn't there for very long. But then he went
what
on.
What do you mean he was on there for? Oh, Donald Glover
right,
was there.
Donald Glover wasn't writing for that show for very long, but that was the majority of what he was doing. And then he went on to be on Community. And you could say what you want about Troy Barnes, but one of the things you could say is that he's not very black. I don't know if he would have passed that Kevin Samuels test in the gym. So, you know, not the most real origins.
Yeah, no, I mean, he started talking with a lot more bass in his voice, you know? Like, when he was in his 20s and he was wearing the, like, tight t-shirts and all that, and he was doing his stand-up, he was a completely different character, which is fine. Like, he's an artist. I get it. I'm just saying, like, the whole blackness thing obviously has some roots in reality, because the first 10 years of his entertainment career, he was still super white.
So do you think that the older that he gets and the more success he gets in Hollywood, he can kind of relax and not have to code switch as much? Like, I feel like he's calming down a bit. He's kind of finding himself.
He got his shit off. He got Young Thug to be on his song. He got his black cosigns. Like, he's made a show about a rapper. You know, he got all of the things that were on his checklist to make sure that he was black. He made sure he put on...
He played Lando Calrissian.
Well, that doesn't count. But he made sure he shouted out Migos when he won his award and let everybody know he knew about Bad and Bougie. He made sure he got all his checklists signed off when he needed it signed off. You know what I'm saying? He won the award for a rap song and not one of his singy songs. So, you know, like, I respect it. He's a dope artist. But it's, again, if once you start peeling the layers back, it is quite interesting.
So I have a question, and forgive me if you guys talked about this already. So the first episode of the season, the Three Slaps episode,
Three Slaps.
Did you guys talk about, so, you know, like the white guy on the boat or whatever who drowns the dude. So when I go back and look, when I went back and rewatched the episode, that guy's name was Ernest. And I'm thinking, like... And then, you know, Black Ernest wakes up.
Okay, so we kind of touched on this where I'm trying to figure out where these E's come into play.
Mm-hmm.
Because
Esco.
Yeah. Yeah. But also, Maze, you said when you looked up the character in the first episode, he was just credited as white.
And then in the Big Payback, he's credited as E. And that's the one where he shoots himself and falls in the pool. But you're saying when they're in the boat, they call him Ernest, or he is referred to
I'm going to go back, because I'm thinking to myself, there has to be something here that's going on. And it made me think about that just because we're just talking about Donald.
I'm like having a whole moment now. Yeah.
Yeah. You're talking about Donald and like his... relationship to his blackness. And I'm just thinking about like the symbolism of having the dude on the boat, right? His name's Ernest, and he wakes up, and then there's Ernest, and it comes back again. And it's like, yo, this dude is very uncomfortable, maybe not with his blackness, but he's probably really uncomfortable with how everybody else perceives his blackness.
Right. You see me as like this white guy or whatever, but I still got some knowledge and some game to pass on to y'all.
Yeah, I feel like there's been a couple of middle fingers to the critiques of how he identifies in some of these, and that's just me.
I agree. Yeah, I think that's exactly what he's doing. That's what he's trying to, the pictures he's trying to paint. Like, you know, fuck y'all niggas. I'm a nigga just like y'all.
Right.
I get it. Wow. I get it. You know, but that's a tough message to like continue to live on, and like I wonder what he's gonna do when he gets past that message, you know?
Because maybe write some episodes where we finally get to see Darius going on an adventure.
They're never gonna give us the Darius adventure, Gabby. The Darius never. They tease never. Us.
And I'm always
they
like,
dangle
what
it
is
in front of
here?
Us, and then they yank it away.
That's what she said.
I was just thinking about that. I was like, what is the message that we're trying to send here by denying Darius his adventures? Like, we can't have black jubilation. Like,
We saw what happened the last time we went on a Darius adventure.
That's true. But
we got Nigel Bowl.
I think I was gonna say,
I was talking about Teddy Perkins.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, that was fucking crazy.
Like, I feel like now that you bring that up, that's kind of what they're teasing, you know?
Yeah, like another Teddy Perkins. Like,
Darius has this map. Oh, he's got a map. He's got a blueprint of the building. Like, what's he gonna find? It's gonna be nuts. Oh, we're never gonna do it. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's what's in the briefcase in Pulp Fiction.
It's what's in the box in Seven. Yes, it's all those things. Yeah. When are we going to find out? But, you know, we did it. We're at episode 9. We got one left. This season does not feel anywhere close to any sort of resolution of any kind. So I really do wonder how the fourth season is going to interact with this one. It's going to be interesting to try to treat it as a whole, I suppose. I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
We'll have to wait and see.
Get like a break.
But there's a lot of really good stuff that emerged from this season, and the anthology aspect, I think, overall worked, and I am pleased with it. But this doesn't feel like we're headed into any sort of resolving finale or even a cliffhanger. Like, it's probably just going to be another self-contained story.
Yeah, I mean, do you think that they're going to include them in it, or do you think they've wrapped the Paperboy storyline up for the season?
Let's go and check out the episode description. You guys know I love to do this every week.
Yeah,
the episode is named Terrare. Yo, Terrare was a real person. Wild. They got to stop biting these better shows, though. That sounds like an anthology episode to me. I don't know about you guys.
Yeah, probably. Also, haven't seen the season. And did you guys watch Dave? Maze, I know you watched Dave, right?
No.
No, you guys didn't watch Dave? Maze, what do you think about his Dave critique now, having seen his response in Atlanta season 3?
I mean, I don't think my response to his critique has changed at all. It was a ludicrous comparison, comparing himself. But it was, frankly, it was on the nose. So, Gabby, he compared himself and his show to Wagyu steak. And he compared Lil Dicky's Dave to a smash burger. Now, the thing about that comparison is that I think that Wagyu steak is wildly overpriced and overhyped. So he kind of walked himself into a trap there. Because I love a good smash burger.
Look, it is so funny because Gabrielle is a steak connoisseur. Okay. Yeah. She is a, where's the beef? She knows
where's the beef.
Yeah.
I don't know. So have you ever had it? Sidebar. Have you ever had like a good Wagyu steak?
I have. And but, like, I'm not saying it's not good.
But you think it's over just.
I think that, because I am also a steak connoisseur, Gabby. Maybe we should, you know, get together sometime, grill up, you know, get some medium rare, maybe edge a little bit towards rare. But I think you can cook a quality steak. It's about how you cook it. It's not about the fact that you got Wagyu steak. Like, it's just more fat. That's really the only difference. So if you love fat, fantastic. But you can make just as good of a steak for half the price, I think.
I will respectfully disagree, but I understand. Because you ain't eating a T-bone like that. But, I mean, it's all good. No, I sous vide all my steaks. I either sous vide or smoke them. I'm not a reverse sear girl. I'm just a sous vide because you can't fuck it up.
It's true. You can't. Yes.
Yeah. So I just sous vide or I grill or smoke them. But that is a wild comparison. I read that interview you guys were talking about.
Yeah.
Where he interviewed himself. So fucking weird. That was just so... I had a hard time reading it, but I was like, man, just going to power through. And I was
like, normally when I interview myself, I like to draw a nice hot bath. I like to get the bubbles going, you know, I like get some candles, maybe play unskippable songs that we were talking about earlier, you know, just really get in my zone.
But hold on real quick, because I don't think any of you guys answered my question about what do you think about him in comparison with Kendrick and like them kind of both being around the same age, occupying the spectrum of cool, weird black men and different, completely different aspects of it.
I'm enjoying watching both of them ascend in their own ways, in their own unique ways. I don't want to compare the two. They just have two totally different childhood experiences. Their upbringing is different. And, you know, we got someone from the South, someone from Compton, two very different places. It's a lot of similarities, I'm sure, but it's very different. You know, I've heard some of my friends that are from Compton talk about their experiences in Compton, and I wouldn't wish that on anyone. So I don't want to compare the two. I just think they have their own journeys, and I'm enjoying being a part of both of it.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, I kind of agree. I mean, I'm struggling to think where I would compare Kendrick's art to Donald's art. Except for the fact that they both have their, like you said, their own unique ways of discussing like society and culture.
Well, yeah, Kendrick told us that he fucked two white bitches this week. So
yeah, he did.
Well, that's true. Yeah. He did.
And when he fucked them?
Yeah,
I very too detailed. Have fucked.
And
two
why
white
he fucked them?
Hey. Oh yeah. I mean, who hasn't? Who hasn't?
I too, sir. Yeah. Yeah, no, I just feel like they come at it from two totally different life experiences. But shout out to both of them not having, you know, black significant others. That's real.
Oh, shit. Oh,
wait, is his girl not black? Kendrick's girl not black?
She is exotic passing. She's not black. She's
exotic. I thought she was biracial. Oh shit.
Oh wow.
She's biracial. Shout out. If you know, you know.
Right. You know, you know. Interesting.
But I also think that's, you know, we love that trope. You know, we
right.
love that trope.
Yeah, I mean I thought it was interesting that Virgil was married to a white woman. Nobody really said anything about that. But it's interesting that it's made a big deal about some people, or just maybe in a larger conversation. But if, you know, certain people, it's not. I think athletes kind of get it the worst. Honestly, like, I remember when Russell Wilson, they won't ever stop bringing that up.
Goodness.
People won't ever stop bringing that up. So,
but to be fair, that wasn't because of Russell Wilson. That was because of her face when he got drafted.
Yeah.
God, she looked like a beached whale. I was like, help that lady.
A beached whale who landed on a beach of $1 million.
Yeah. Excited beach whale.
Gleeful beach whale.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting that Kareem had a white wife. And we were kind of reminded of that with Winning Time. And him being so pro-black and like the kind of, you know, the complexities that creates.
Yeah, no,
it's just interesting. And obviously, like, being a black man, like you really do get criticized if you date anybody outside of your race, like in your family, otherwise, like other black people are not, they'll be cool to the person in their face, but if it's just y'all, they like, what's up?
Listen, my thing
you don't
about
like,
it.
You don't like black girls? That's what they always say. You don't like black girls?
Oh, like,
you don't
like black girls.
Yeah. That's always the thing.
I used to be a serial interracial dater.
Mm. Yeah.
Like, serial. It was all over the place. definitely United Nations over here. My whole thing was, as long as we can discuss the movement before I put my bonnet on, and you don't even ask me what a bonnet is, we straight.
Right.
those are the two like main hurdles you got to get over. Like, don't ask me why I'm tying my hair up. Don't do it. And you better have lotion in your house, please. Please.
Some people don't have lotion in their house.
Some people really do not have lotion some people in their house.
When Dave Chappelle made the joke about white people not having washcloths, that was one of the funniest shit ever. Because some white people don't use washcloths.
Maze is like, what's a washcloth?
I'm conspicuously silent during this. I feel like I can't really win either way.
Maze, you don't use a washcloth?
Either I say that I have a loofah and out myself as a scrub, or I be quiet and let you make your own assumptions. Either way, I think I lose. I've got lotion. I have washcloths. I might use them. How about that? Perhaps I do.
You got them stored. Just in case you got a sister over.
If I'm interviewing myself in the bathroom, maybe I get a washcloth out. You never know.
Oh, wow.
But
I love it.
Congrats on having lotion.
I'm excited about... Oh, yes, I have lotion. I do have lotion. I was going to go get it, but I'm just going to trust that y'all believe
me. We believe you. Believe you.
Thank you. Got one more episode of Atlanta, and then we shall see where the showtime takes us. But until then, for Gabby, for Bethany, for Jason, I'm Anthony Mays. We'll see you next time on Showtime. I don't do the whole wrap-up now because we're not talking about that show anymore. So it's just Showtime. Time for the show.
Uno de los artistas más populares de la música latina. Danny Ocean, Reflexa Tour 2024, presentado por Toyota. Sábado el 12 de octubre, Brooklyn Paramount.
Porque te amo demasiado, te amo demasiado.
Danny Ocean, en vivo. Boletos a la venta viernes a las 10 a.m. en LiveNation.com. Uno de los artistas más populares de la música latina. Danny Ocean, Reflexa Tour 2024, presentado por Toyota. Sábado el 12 de octubre, Brooklyn Paramount.
Porque te amo demasiado, te amo demasiado.
Danny Ocean, en vivo. Boletos a la venta viernes a las 10 a.m. en LiveNation.com. Uno de los artistas más populares de la música latina. Danny Ocean, Reflexa Tour 2024, presentado por Toyota. Sábado el 12 de octubre, Brooklyn Paramount.
Porque te amo demasiado, te amo demasiado.
Danny Ocean, en vivo.
Y supongo que aún estoy.
Boletos a la venta ya en LiveNation.com. Uno de los artistas más populares de la música latina. Danny Ocean, Reflexa Tour 2024, presentado por Toyota. Sábado el 12 de octubre, Brooklyn Paramount.
Porque te amo demasiado, te amo demasiado.
Danny Ocean, en vivo. Boletos a la venta viernes a las 10 a.m. en LiveNation.com.